I'm Lauren Sega, Manager of Communications for Homeport, a nonprofit affordable housing developer in Central Ohio. We're in one of the fastest growing areas in the country, and while we've seen the growth, we've felt the pains that come along with it, especially when it comes to housing all of us and our incoming neighbors. Each month, we're interviewing local experts on the issues, the barriers, and the solutions around housing and development, hoping to shed some light on how we got where we are and what we can do to create a future that houses everyone. This is Level With Us. It's often said on Level With Us that housing intersects with every other aspect of our lives. Substandard housing conditions like water leaks, pest infestation, and residential crowding can lead to poor health, while quality housing can aid in better health. Lark Mallory's back for this episode, and she's sharing her own personal anecdote related to this concept. Let's lay the foundation.
You know, I'll tell a personal story. So, divorced mom of two young adults. During the pandemic, my daughter was at Duquesne University. During the pandemic, she came home with COVID. You know, we have a house. My two children and I have a house. So I could separate her, segregate her from my son and me in a space that was comfortable. But had we not had safe, secure, and housing that I personally can afford, what would the impact have been on our family, or what would the impact have been on her? You know, during the pandemic, we learned, some of us learned, some of us already knew, that your housing, that your zip code affects your overall health. If people don't have housing that they can afford, that's safe and decent, how does anything else matter? How, if I didn't have that, what would have happened to my own child? So I really believe in housing as a fundamental building block of life.
If housing is a fundamental building block of life, it should be of strong, reliable, attainable, and sustainable materials, right? But for many, particularly those considered low income and extremely low income, the simple provision of housing can be a luxury, often meaning they're settling for older units in need of repairs and lacking proper insulation or ventilation. Along with posing health risks during a pandemic, risks Lark and her family were able to mitigate, this has further-reaching implications, especially when we talk about the increasing frequency of climate events. Poor quality housing has higher energy costs and larger carbon footprints. In a climate event, these homes are at higher risk, increasing the likelihood of displacement and homelessness for the residents inside. In 2021, 14.5 million homes were affected by climate-related hazards, such as hurricanes, wildfire, and hail. In 2022, more than 3.4 million Americans were forced to evacuate their homes due to a disaster. While 40% returned home within a week, 16% of displaced adults never returned home. 12% were out of their homes for more than 6 months. While the Midwest isn't seeing many wildfires or hurricanes, we're far from immune to flooding or tornadoes. Ultimately, climate hazards are taking more housing units off the market, particularly older housing units in need of repairs that make up a substantial portion of the nation's unsubsidized affordable housing stock, displacing residents and pushing affordability further out of reach, especially for renters and owners with limited means. These realities led to some interesting discussion for me and Lark. Can we build affordable housing that is climate resilient? How do we do it all at once? Turns out, not only is it possible, but there are billions of dollars going into that effort this year.
Neighborhoods that have faced this investment don't have as much trees.
Yeah.
Don't have as many trees, and so they have that to, like, what kind of neighborhoods deserve tree-lined sidewalks? What kind of neighborhoods deserve proximity to parks and, you know, good schools? And
but, you know, you just hit on something that we have not addressed, and I know we're going to get into my new venture, but climate.
Mm-hmm.
Green space.
Yeah.
We know that the areas that have been disinvested in are also going to be the first to suffer from climate impact, from climate resiliency. So we've got to start talking about affordable, but also climate resistant.
Yeah.
And we haven't even started to address those issues. So if a neighborhood does have more trees, how does that affect the oxygen, the breathing, the mental health of those citizens?
Yeah. Protection from heat and...
all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so climate resiliency, we're going to have to start addressing that in the same sentence as affordability.
It feels like we're so far behind. I mean, we're talking about homes that may not have a fully working stove or refrigerator. Like, how do we get to the point where they're energy efficient?
Right, right. So, my goodness, you're just teeing them up for me.
I'm sorry.
So that was one of the things I was starting to look at AHT.
Yeah.
And in my, so I did just set up, and when I left AHT, did just set up a new economic development advisory company. And one of the issues I do want to address is green.
Mm-hmm.
We have got to become more green. And I honestly believe that you can address green and affordability and safe and decent all in the same sentence. They're not mutually exclusive. Making it energy efficient, can we start talking about solar panels, great trees? All of this has got to go together.
Yeah.
And we also know, so I'm also part of LinkUS. I co-chair the ETOD Equitable Transit Oriented Development Subcommittee with Yarmir Steiner. So we're talking about transportation. Why does transportation matter to housing? It all literally relates together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to, you aren't locked into your neighborhood. You don't have to look for a job around the corner.
Right. But it has to be, transportation also has to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we are a car-dependent society. I started practicing law after my LLM in Washington, D.C. I never drove to work. I drove to the train station.
D.C. has a lovely system.
Right. And then I jumped on the train and I went into town to work.
Mm-hmm.
But there were also partners at the law firm. Maybe they didn't take a train, but some of them even took the bus.
Yeah.
We are going to have to shift how we do transportation if we are going to address housing, economic competitiveness, and living a climate-resistant life. Columbus, Central Ohio, we are in a very unique position. We can now design how we live, what's that, live, work, and play, as they like to say. We can design it right now.
And now it's time to level up. Part of that design is already underway, with efforts like Zone In, the city's plan to reform our 70-year-old zoning code, and LinkUS, a regional plan led by COTA to build out our public transit system and add about 500 more miles of sidewalks and bikeways across Franklin and surrounding counties. And these are crucial steps. Research shows that land use is a key indicator of how large a carbon footprint a city will have. The more we sprawl, the more we rely on cars, the more greenhouse gas emissions we produce. Denser construction, supplemented with modes of transportation that can move a lot of people at once, or that allow people to walk and bike, is what will make Columbus and Central Ohio a greener, and ultimately healthier, place to live. But bigger things are also coming down the pike. Funding that could build whole communities that are not only affordable, but climate resilient. Despite the air of uncertainty around our national political landscape, Lark says some big dollars are already in motion.
It is an interesting national landscape. I'm going to focus on what we know has been good.
Yeah.
This current administration, the EPA, they have put out dollars that I believe are once-in-a-lifetime dollars. Billions as in B with a boy. And there are several national CDFIs that have won these funds and are now looking at what we just talked about, green lending. And how do we marry LIHTC with that green lending so that the neighborhoods that have gone without investment are now not only receiving investment, but we're also making them energy efficient. We're making them green communities. and we're bettering people's lives. So I don't know what's going to happen. It is scary, but I am, regardless of what happens, I am happy to say that we will see some climate changing or climate resilient efforts by developers with this new national funding. And we're talking about a lot of money. So green is really going to be a hot topic. When I was at AHT, we signed on with two or three different consortiums. So you had to present what projects you had or what types of projects you had, sign these consortium letters, and then the consortium goes to the EPA to apply for funding. We signed on with consortiums that have won over $3 billion. So it's not just energy efficient at the homeowner level, but also, you know, you start talking solar panels for an entire development. What is the cost savings for that developer? But then also, what does that do from a climate perspective for that development in that neighborhood? So larger scale.
I see. Do we have any of that yet?
The green money is still, they're still figuring it out.
Yeah.
We haven't seen it filter down, but it just started being deployed to the consortiums earlier this year.
Yeah. So it's coming.
It's coming. And
regardless of administration or?
Oh, the money is out there.
Okay.
So the consortiums already have it.
Okay.
So it can't, I mean, I'm not going to say it can't. You just never know.
Right.
But it's already out there. And right now it's how does it make its way down to developers.
Unlike the tax credits that Ohio developers receive through the Ohio Housing Finance Agency, the dollars from the EPA's Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund is filtering through dozens of CDFIs, or Community Development Financial Institutions, and nonprofit developers can then apply for that funding through those CDFIs, one of those being the Opportunity Finance Network, which AHT is part of and Lark talks more about. While the funding has been deployed, the application and award process has yet to be defined, as the funding was just granted in April.
And unlike, say, an OFA, it never hits any type of governmental, I mean, it could if a government applied for it, but there are private nonprofits that apply for these dollars.
Okay.
And I think those dollars are going to be crucial to moving us forward. As I mentioned earlier, it's all interrelated. Yes, it has to be safe. It has to be decent. Has to be affordable, but how do we plan for the future in terms of climate resiliency as well?
As Ohioans, we may feel like we're sitting pretty, comfortably insulated from the effects of climate change. We may look at places in the Sun Belt like Houston and Phoenix and feel lucky to avoid stifling heat waves and hurricanes. But as the effects of worsening climate continue, researchers are predicting a potentially chaotic and costly mass exodus to climate havens, namely the Midwest and Northeast, if we don't prepare. Climate resilience initiatives like what we're seeing through the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund are great to see, and I hope to be on here, on Level With Us, someday soon, talking about the solar-powered community Homeport is building. Level With Us listeners, we are 2 weeks out from Voice and Vision. Have you registered? Join us from 11 to 1 on Wednesday, October 16th, and hear from local affordable housing experts, including Lark, and Homeport's own president and CEO, Leah Evans. We're also excited to have Leah Rothstein, author of Just Action, as our keynote speaker. Just Action, a sequel to the influential Color of Law, offers strategies to redress the wrongs of segregation. While the Color of Law revealed the government's role in creating residential segregation, Just Action provides a roadmap for local community groups to initiate change. So don't miss out. Register today. There's a link in the show notes for you. Till next time. Level With Us is brought to you by Homeport and is recorded, mixed, and edited by Lauren Sega. All sources are in the show notes. Homeport creates strong communities by developing quality, affordable homes on a cornerstone of dignity, security, and opportunity. To learn more, or if you'd like to support our mission, visit us at homeportohio.org.